of truly apocalyptic proportions to make so much as a crack. It exuded a very real, visceral kind of holiness, and in spite of the enchantments woven around her coach, Ulrika felt as if she were in the presence of Galmaraz itself. Ever since Nagash's defeat to Sigmar, and the curse that the great necromancer then laid upon all vampire kind for refusing to aid him, the Heldenhammer's power over the Arisen had been strong. The repulsion from that barrier of force blocked even her master's attempts at scrying. And yet Ulrika knew that Max was alive. They had a connection that she could trace all the way back to Prague, when his magic had purged her then mortal body of plague. A part of him had remained with her ever since. It had outlived death, endured even as her perception of colour, her internal organs, and all other affections had withered. Perhaps it was the nature of the magic, for the light was, of course, always anathema to the dark. She thought she loved him. Her master might have had only a passing interest in Max's welfare, but to Ulrika, the wizard was almost as important as their other goals. Nothing less than saving the world, or at least preserving it. The rising trail turned in towards the World's Edge Mountains, robbing Ulrika of her view and pushing her into her seat as the ascent steepened. Ahead rose Rackspire. It was a black talon of volcanic rock that jutted from the World's Edge Mountains like a vestigial claw. Its battlements studded the flanks of the mountains themselves. From casements of hewn stone, stub-nosed cannon were angled onto the trail, and scarlet banners fluttered from the turrets. But there were no guards that Ulrika could perceive, at least none with a beating heart. The trail terminated at a stark granite gatehouse. The gates were open, and the portcullis raised, but the edifice was far from welcoming. The iron spikes at the base of the portcullis resembled a vampire's fangs. The horses responded to Damir's goading to draw the coach into the barbican's cold throat. Ulrika felt the nocturnal flutter of nervous butterflies. An acceptance of one's power came with the acute realization of one's place in the scale of such powers. And Ulrika was but an infant compared to the dark majesty that now masqueraded as the late Commandant Rock.
"My doom is at hand," whispered Durin Drakfar, eyes closed as if in prayer.
His face had taken a second layering of muck from the maltreated portion of the underway they now travelled. He ran his fingers over his face to re-expose the ligament-like lines of his demon tattoos.
"By the face of the Destroyer, by the coming end times, grant this dwarf a swift and bloody doom."
"Not so keen at the front there,"
Cracky grumbled from the rear of the column. The way his torchlight deepened the shadows of Durin's face made the demon slayer look like a dwarf buried within another dwarf. Cracky cleared his throat, suddenly nervous.
"You'll make the rest of us look bad."
Durin returned the laughter with a hollow stare. He flexed his fingers and stared at his hands as though marvelling at them.
"Can you not feel it? The end is nigh."
"Beastmen,"
said Scalf with a short nod, then pointed forward. "Ahead."
"Snorri thinks we should all stop talking about it then,"
Snorri snapped, trying and failing to forget about the beer strapped to Cracky's back.
"Heedless or measured, Snorri, these are the end times," said Scalf. "A doom will find us all, however we seek it."
"Aye,"
Cracky murmured without confidence, before taking a deep breath and turning to Durin.
"So chuff off about yours."
Drawing his axe, Durin smiled coldly, then said nothing and walked away.
"I don't like him," said Cracky, pulling a face. "That's Snorri's rememberer you're talking about,"
said Snorri.
"I do not like anyone," said Scalf. "And they, in their wisdom, do not like me. You are slayers, and all that matters is your oaths to Grimnir, to me, and to Gorlin."
He nodded at the young runesmith as he passed, burdened by his heavy pack and walking with the aid of his staff. The thin old slayer, Drogon, and a posse of shortbeards stuck to him like rust. Big Brock Balderson marched with a graven scowl, axe berthed against his shoulder and eyes fixed forward, as though determined to ignore the dripping walls that evidenced dwarfish decline in their own former domain.
"Guard the runesmith with your lives, and the rest will follow, as dirt follows digging."
Cracky drew a noisy breath and pulled on a fist spike. A mail sheaf fell down his forearm to his bicep. After jigging it until the mail was free of kinks and comfortable, he adjusted his shoulders into his beer harness. Snorri smacked his lips. He had to force himself to swallow and work some saliva onto his tongue before he could speak.
"That looks heavy."
A sorry grin parted Cracky's beard.
"I should have known you weren't sticking around at the back for my company."
"Just a little. Snorri only wants one mouthful, he promises."
Cracky sighed, shoulders slumping under their load.
"I think Skalf pulled a cruel one on you, Snorri, I do. But an oath is an oath."
The dwarf looked hurt despite his grin, and suddenly Snorri didn't feel so thirsty anymore. He had hurt enough friends. He remembered that much.
"I suggest you stand by Durin rather than me," Cracky went on. "He seems intent on a fast doom for you both."
The black coach clattered through the long grey tunnel of the Barbican and out onto a cobbled bailey. Ahead, encircled by a natural chasm, was the rugged keep of Vrakspire itself. It was built high onto a knuckle of rock, towering high enough over its mountainous fortifications to grant a view over the Auric Bastion itself and into the heartlands of home. On a clear day, her master could see all the way to Kislev City. Ulrika looked inside of herself, expecting to be moved by the thought of home. But there was nothing, just a vague emptiness that she felt that she should fill. The coach continued over the uneven cobbles towards the chasm-spanning drawbridge that led on to the keep. Ulrika sensed the granite integrity of the outer walls enclose her. They were massive, almost dwarfish in the ruggedness of their construction, and struck from mountainside to mountainside in a rough diamond around the keep. The bright colours of Ostermark fluttered through the sleeting rain, interspersed with banners bearing a heraldry that a man of this province would have to study far indeed to recognize. The motif was unusual and chilling. A snarling, inhuman skull, winged like a bat and displayed upon a field of blood-red cloth. Beneath their banners, shadowed figures were slumped on the parapet. Ulrika's dark-piercing vision picked out halberds and crossbows, but not a breath of movement. Not a glimmer of warmth. They were meat wrapped in Ostermark livery. Besides Damir and his horses, not a single heart beat. The prevailing sense of emptiness only served to emphasize a sense of what she could only describe as omniscience as it closed around the coach. Ulrika felt her hairs rise.
"Welcome back, Ulrika."
The urbane voice spoke directly into her thoughts, words rushing through the blood vessels of her brain. It was cultured to the point of antiquity, the ancient roots of an accent discernible only to a fellow child of the steppe who knew where to look. The casual display of power was astonishing. Ulrika had last imbibed her master's blood before she had left for Altdorf, and it remained strong. The recollection made her mouth ache. This was how Damir felt when she went too long without bleeding him. The monster within her bared its fangs and announced its hunger. This was what Krieger had felt when he had been trapped in Prague the last time chaos waxed.
"The Lifebringer marches on the Auric Bastion as we speak. Everything is prepared for him. For us."
Ulrika peered through the window of her coach, studying Rackspire's distant pinnacle. One thing Felix had thus far failed to realize was that to get into Kislev, the Auric Bastion would first have to come down. She considered the countless thousands of currently living Ostermarkers in the path of the Chaos Horde on the veldt below. And still she felt nothing. Kislev was alive, and it had become a land of surpassing beauty. Gone were the fields of grain and barley, their monotony of colour and form. Gone, too, were the men that had grown them, the livestock they had fed, the vermin they had harboured. In their place had come life. Mile upon infinitely diverse mile of beastmen, marauders, and chaos warriors clamoured under the falling snow. Armour of every type, flesh of every hue, horns, hooves, tentacles, claws. Every twisted possibility of creation was here, and here for battle. The roar from so many divergent varieties of throat was all consumptive, a thunderous outpouring of adulation to their champions and their gods. The sound of one name rose above all others. He was the conqueror of Kislev.
Helbras!
Where the bare opal-coloured flesh of his feet fell, the snow melted and birthed flowers. The very air around him crackled with an aurora of changeling energy. It fizzed and popped, spontaneous generations summoning iridescent dragonflies that hummed ahead of his path like evangelists to a new order. His plate armour met the colour shift of the Auric Bastion with a rainbow iridescence of possibilities. Through the eye slits of his helm he studied the edifice's artificial wrongness. It was a barrier, and life suffered no barrier. Life would dig. It would bore. It would learn how to fly. And however distant its bars, Eichold Helbras would not exist within a cage. He had broken free of the Troll King. He would break this. Watching the legions crushed against the bastion's base was like watching ants at work. From the mutated giants battering it with massive uprooted trees, through the sorcerers beseeching the aid of the infernal, to the harpies that screeched their frustrations from the clouds, it was individually chaotic, but collectively driven. A staccato string of concussive screams resounded over the plain, as the demon-possessed hell cannon of a chaos dwarf contingent blasted the barrier. From the forest to the west, beastmen locked horns and fought for the right to enter the ancient dwarf tunnelway they had uncovered there. Perhaps the tunnels even led somewhere. Helbras was not omniscient. There was no purpose beyond the effort alone. One amongst the legion sorcerers paused in her incantations as Helbras approached. Beneath a long decorative silk robe, she wore plate mail the colour of roses, with mouldings edged in gold, each piece stylized into the form of androgynous figures that seemed to writhe in orgiastic embrace. She was flanked by an honour guard of fleshy pink trolls, accoutred in stylized chaos armour and with fixed expressions of existential wonder. The colours of Helbras's armour blurred into red as he ground his bare hands into fists. He hated trolls with a passion.
"Helbras," moaned the sorceress, as if pleasured by the mere sound of her voice. "I have claimed this part of the wall for my own. When it falls, it shall be the name of Porphyry the Unchaste that they sing, conqueror of the Palace of Flesh, survivor of the Trial of 12 Pleasures, defiler of the Flower of Kislev."
Extending a hand, she planted it flat against the sheer stone of the Auric Bastion, and produced a smile that could have corrupted a dead man.
"I stand corrected," Helbras bowed. "It is yours."
Porphyry laughed, then suddenly cried out as a spasmodic wave racked her body. The life-giving power of change crackled through her. Her thighs bulged and pushed her feet into the earth. Knots formed in her perfect flesh as it hardened, cracked, and birthed new life in the form of buds and flowers. Her mouth opened to scream, but rather than a human voice, there emerged a green shoot that, as if drawn by some sustenance other than sunlight, whipped into the Auric Bastion with a great splintering of stone. Porphyry the Unchaste gave one last moan as the last plates of chaos armour were pushed aside and more questing shoots forced their way through. Life was emergent. The humblest fungus would tunnel through the mightiest wall, for food, for shelter, and often for the simple imperative of expansion. It was better to blossom as the flower of chaos than to toil in the cages of Prague. He could not defeat the Troll King, but he had escaped him, smashed the Ice Queen, torn down her Ogham stones, and gifted every magician that his former captor craved an invigorative new form. The unchaste gave a zoetic pulse, a push of labour that thrust squirming hyphae into the wall. Rock groaned, and then the auric bastion began to split. Hellbrass drew his weapon, the two-handed broadsword named Windblade. The cracks rose higher, and so did the pitch of his laughter.
Let there be life!
Chapter 7. The Battle of Trzeciostry.
Heldenhammer, help us now, breathed Gustav Jaeger, his wiry mare spraying to a halt on the black slush road north of the Talabek bridge crossing. Everyone knew that Sigmar would return for the final battle. The now was to beseech his aid early, and on current evidence appeared to Felix completely superfluous. Across the low, battlement-crusted hills of the Empire's northern front, men climbed from their tents, lowered their weapons, and stared upwards in disbelief. The Auric Bastion was a mountain. It had stood inviolate for a year, and it was coming down. The creak of wild roots and splitting stone resounded over the plain. It was louder than thunder, as though the earth had been turned downside up and then wrenched asunder. A clutch of gargantuan vines ripped through the surface of the stone. Thorns like dragon's teeth bit into the wall as the chaos vines strove higher, throwing out waxy leaves with the span of galleon's sails to bat boulder-sized debris out over the dumbstruck imperial lines. Horns began to sound off as boulders hammered down on the forward positions like meteors. Men were crushed, and wagons smashed to smithereens. Stretches of drystone wall as old as the borders of the Empire were reduced to flying rubble under the sheer tonnage of rock. Into the screams of confusion and pain came the harpies. Like a cloud of bees released from the nether reaches of hell, they swarmed through the Auric Bastion's breach, cackling and gambling between the pulsing vines towards the artillery batteries on the surrounding hills. At once feminine and monstrous, they swept down on those men forced from cover by the preceding barrage to hoist them screaming into the air. A sputter of handgun fire peppered the cloud, a futile gesture of defiance compared to the shrieking of the harpies and the continual gut rumble of fissuring rock. But the wall of musket shot was enough to drive the flock from the batteries. Shrieking into the black powder thunder, the swarm spiraled into dozens of splinter flocks that tore across the imperial lines. Men cried out, ducked, those that didn't, snatched up by clawed hands and dropped from a great height. Matchlocks crackled, the spark of ignitions rippling back across the battle lines. And then came the rest. Felix had seen and done too much to fully share in his nephew's horror, but even he found himself shaping the hammer across his chest and mouthing a prayer for more to welcome his soul to the Garden of the Dead. As he watched, a giant, so muscular and oiled that he gleamed, kicked his way through the vine-choked rubble of the Auric Bastion like a living battering ram. Horsemen in thick furs waved stub spears over their heads and yapped like wild dogs, pushing their mounts past the striding giant until they foamed at the mouth. Beautiful demon women with pincer claws kept pace on loping two-legged steeds, while strange stingray-like creatures soared overhead, wings rippling on the invisible currents of magic through which they swam. Like a man coming around to find the reality of waking infinitely worse than his nightmares, the first cannon roared, then another. The artillery, crump, shouting down the rattle of halberds, spears, 100 banners, and the cries of 40,000 Ostermark soldiers. Felix's heart lifted to see men of his empire respond to the hell of the end times with such stubbornness and courage. He wished Gotrek was here to see the mettle of men. The Slayer would have loved this.
Gustav, ride back to Badenhof and quickly.
You'll get no argument from me,
Gustav returned.
He had one of a brace of pistols drawn and tracked the swooping of the nearest harpies anxiously.
But what are you going to do?
Felix smiled wryly as he drew Karankul.
Sigma, but that felt good.
Even the knot of pre-battle jitters in his belly felt as familiar as an old pair of shoes, or a poem that he had written as a child and thought forgotten. Bretonnia burned. Kislev was gone. The end times were here, and damn it if it was prideful, but Felix Jaeger had played some part or other in every major conflict of the last 20 years, and he wasn't about to start sitting out now.
What I came to.
You realize how ridiculous you sound? This is what comes of reading von Dale.
A vast wedge of chaos infantry and monsters had emerged from the ruins of the Auric Bastion and was charging after the giant towards the fortified but clearly doomed village between them and the main imperial positions. Ulrika had called it Kurziko. From the shape of the battle lines and the contours of the various gun emplacements and earthworks, it was clear that this was, if it could be called that, some kind of idealized scenario. The Empire's commanders had anticipated, and correctly, that the first objective of the Chaos Host would be to take the standing stones from which their wizards summoned the Auric Bastion. The enemy marched under a withering enfilade of crossbow and handgun fire, burying every foot with 100 lives. Mortar shells whistled overhead to detonate in plumes of dirt and fire. As Felix watched, a hellblaster volley gun, sighted within a drystone bastion on a hillock to the side of the advance, unleashed all 9 barrels in a cyclone of ash and thunder. One thing was clear from the explosions and the screams. It was not enough. For a second, Felix wanted to send Gustav off with a message for Kat. Nothing complicated, just that he loved her and had been thinking about her at the end. For some reason, though, he didn't. Instead, spurring the horse Gustav had lent him on towards Kurziko, because he still wasn't sure that either was entirely true. Gunner Heiss of the Nuln Artillerymen detachment drew aside the straw gabion that blocked the embrasure of the drystone bastion and yelled range and distance, resorting to miming up and down and indicating yardage on his fingers. The Chaos Horde made such a din it was as if the bastion had been flooded with screams. By comparison, the ringing report of the Hellblaster, with which their own great cannon shared a berth, was as homely as songs on Sigmastag. Through the narrow slits in the walls, both crews tracked the monstrous pink-skinned giant striding towards Kurziko. Its bald head rose almost level with the bastion on its hill, inducing handgun fire to snap across from the stake-lined picket below it.
"Range 90 feet! Wind speed 18 knots! 2 degrees down!"
No one could hear him, but Heiss screamed directions anyway out of habit, then yanked down his fist and threw himself flat against the wall.
"Fire!"
Ulrika watched from the back of a galloping white stallion as a terrific explosion blasted the giant's head from its shoulders. Blood spouted from flaps of flesh that moments before had been part of a neck, and the monster yawed over, crushing dozens and sending a shockwave through the ground that sent hundreds more flying.
"Gospodarini!"
The Ungol warriors cheered to see the monster fall. Forget for a moment that there were a score worse horrors in its wake. Knock another arrow, have another drink, for today it did not matter. Damir hollered with them, standing in the stirrups and riding with no hands like a circus performer, as he pumped his fists to encourage them to shout louder. And 100 horse archers from the northern oblast of Kislev, all that she and her master had been able to save before the Auric Bastion had been conjured, could make one hell of a din. Ulrika wished she could appreciate it more. The Ungols were warriors born, and commanding them in such a battle should have been a singular thrill. Everything was as she craved it. Enemies to fight, a fine horse beneath her, and the soil of Kislev beneath him. She was one of the arisen, reborn to war. She could feel the winds of magic where they flowed, could track the path of demons by the sour taste, and could foretell the ebb of fortune by the wavering of men's hearts. In her pearl-white half-plate armour she felt invincible. It was heavier than a mortal knight could wear, and still function, and had been specially strengthened around the heart and the throat, with the vulnerabilities of a vampiric warrior forefront in the artificer's thinking. She would have slept in it if she could. The old leathers she had travelled in from Altdorf had been for Felix's benefit, and now, with battle looming, he had managed to wander off. Had she not explained often enough that she needed him? Her great white charger thundered through the sleet, droplets lashing Ulrika's face as she cast her nose side to side in search of Felix's scent. She knew his body inside and out. She had just spent the last 4 weeks alone in a carriage with him. All she needed was a trace, and she could track him across mountains and oceans. There. Ulrika reined with a curse, wheeling the braying stallion around to face Kurziko.
"Felix, you idiot! Do you do these things on purpose?"
"Where are you going, Ulrika?" The voice rushed through her mind. "My forces await you to the east. All I lose here today will be for nothing if you do not make it to Prague."
Ulrika snarled, but she had no power to deny her master access to her mind.
"I will never make it back without Felix. You know that..."
The howls of the Chaos Horde and the boom of the Empire's guns filled the air. Ulrika felt the tingle of their collective roar upon her skin, like the remembered sense of walking in from the cold and standing too close to the fire. The enemy was so numerous that they looked more like some metallic oil that had risen from the hills than an assemblage of independent men and beasts. They were a tidal wave. They could only be mitigated, not reasoned with, and certainly not stopped. They were a force of nature that she and her master had permitted to be unleashed. As she watched, Rock's tattered regiments redeployed to oppose them. No, not to oppose. Their ranks mustered to the flanks of Kurziko, as if to channel the Chaos Legions right down onto it and away from other parts of the field, such as the east.
"You cannot prevail against what is coming."
"Demir!"
she called. Her thrall sank into the saddle and reined in beside her, a wide grin on his wizened chestnut face. Ulrika pointed to the far east of the battle line, where a battalion some 2,000 strong of heavy infantry and demi-lancer companies waited out the fighting with an inhuman detachment. The crimson banners of Commandant Rock fluttered in the wind.
"Carry on as planned. I will join you shortly."
"Don't ask me to leave you,"
said Damir. In spite of his rough features and colourful step-warrior garb, he looked as lost as a puppy. Ulrika was reminded why she had always resisted the keeping of thralls. Baring her fangs, she drew a long, slightly curved sabre from its saddle sheath.
"Don't make me ask you again."
The fury of the end times bore down on the walls of Kurziko. Its battlements flared with handgun fire. A trained arquebusier could make 2 shots in a minute, 3 if he was particularly skilled, and the 200 soldiers with their thick burgundy hauberks, slashed sleeves and bandoliers stuffed with munitions were the best left in Ostermark. Iron pellets punched through bone, steel and chaos plate, and brick by bleeding brick assembled a wall of corpses 5 feet high. Kurgan berserkers clambered over it. Mutated ogres smashed it down before they too were riddled with shot. Mortar rounds blasted whole sections to pieces. Whether it was the frustrations of being held behind the Auric Bastion for so long, being unleashed, or some madness that came with the worship of chaos, they pushed on, undaunted. Cannon and handgun fire blistered the emplacements of the surrounding hills and earthworks.
"Reload!"
roared Gunnar Heiss over the ringing in the cannon crew's ears, waving his hand in a circle above his head. "Turn it around, quickly, quickly." The great cannon was hauled back on its tracks until the chains on its carriage yanked taut. A crewman rammed a sponge down the muzzle to clean the inside of the barrel, while a second fetched powder. The sponge was removed, powder poured inside, followed by wadding, and then a third man tipped in the cannonball. It hit the wadding with a dull thunk, and the fourth and final crewman rammed it tight. Then all 4 men put their shoulders to the wheels and heaved it back into firing position.
Heiss withdrew the gabion from the embrasure, then screamed as a torrent of flame jetted through the slit and immolated the top half of his body. Harpies shrieked overhead as the chaos dragon Calibros thumped into the hillock, warbled like a strangled child, and then demolished the entire bastion with a swipe of its claws. Men and their machines scattered down the hillside. Calibros beat its wings for lift before washing a parting gout of dirty red flame over the terrified arquebusiers on the hill. Armor melted and flesh burned. Powder cartridges ignited like bones popping in a fire. Prague had been too small, and the Troll King too patient in the gathering of his monstrous host. Calibros craved conquest, and with Hellbrass he would have it. A sibilant chuckle rippled along the dragon's long neck as it launched its bulk into the air and swooped on Kurziko. Krail of the Blue Wolf sprinted ahead of his warband. Sleet beat off his bare chest. Arrows and solid shot rained from the front and from both sides, delivering death with the distant hand of gods. The Tsar of the Blue Wolves drove himself through the storm with a roar and launched himself onto the ragged block of stinking, blood-soaked halberdiers like the wolf into which the Changer had remade him. They didn't react, or did so too slowly, halberds jerking about like bad clockwork toys, as Krail's axes went to work, tearing out jugulars, splitting bellies and severing limbs. There was little blood. Even their guts flowed sluggishly. They stank of emptied bowels and rot. A warrior whose weapon arm Krail had just severed stumbled around after him, moaned, and then lunged to take a bite out of his neck. The Walking Dead. The Southmen were desperate indeed. With a scissoring motion of his axes, the Tsar beheaded the dead thing.
"Hellbrass!"
he howled, crying to the Chaos Moon, as the fastest of his warband caught up and ploughed into the halberdiers.
"Archaon!"
came the return.
"Cha!"
No man could stand against the onslaught of the Blue Wolves. But the dead fought on, even as they were torn limb from limb, and with hearts impaled on blood-soaked adzes. The charge slowed, bogged down in a stew of entrails and cold bodies. Clammy, rot-softened soldiers pressed him from all sides. With a snarl of animal rage, Krail drove forward. The wolf of Char would rip himself a path in the dank blood of the dead. A heavy blade swung for him. He ducked and smashed the corpse's head from its shoulders. The grave held no fears for one of the gods' immortals. He pounced on another, splitting its skull and spilling its cold brains over the snow. He gave a triumphant howl that his warband picked up. The plains to the east of the Southman village lay open. Only a handful of zombies and a single woman still stood in his way. She was slender in the way of southern women, and pale as bone carved from the earth by a winter storm. She was garbed in a dress so white it was almost translucent and seemed to sink away through the earth at her feet. Krail bared his teeth and advanced. The woman smiled back, spreading her arms as if to welcome him. As she did so, she floated an inch from the ground, the hem of her dress falling past her feet. Her hair billowed around her like the moon's halo, skin seeming to wither and retreat into a cruel mask that had been blackened as if by a witch's curse. Eye sockets blazed diamond blue as, still smiling, the Banshee took a deep breath. The Banshee's scream turned hair white and sent shivers through men's hearts as far away as Wilhelmshügel.
"Sigmar's blood,"
breathed General von Karlsdorff as the malignant pulse shot through the flanks of the Chaos charge. After a moment's hesitation, pride trumped fear, and he raised his eyeglass. The motive blur focused onto a pale figure, ethereal as starlight, and surrounded by wizened and lifeless corpses. Only their furs and barbarian trophy rings identified them as Kurgan. He watched in horror as some of them began to twitch, atrophied muscles struggling to grasp dead men's weapons and rise again. With trembling fingers he lowered the glass. Ostermark had her share of horrors, but never would he have expected to see the living and the dead side by side this side of the Sylvanian border. "The alliances we must make," he thought,
wondering, not for the first time, who Rock had sold his soul to. Reaching into his burgundy greatcoat, he pulled out a silver hip flask, filled with a liquor the natives called Gorilka. He swirled its contents without the slightest intention of opening it. Dimly, his hearing virtually obliterated by the pound of mortars, he became aware that the guns had stopped. The gunnery sergeant in charge turned to him with smoky, bloodshot eyes.
"What should we fire at, General?"
Von Karlstorff stared at the Reichlander as though he had been replaced by a village imbecile.
"They're in Empire colours, aren't they? So fire at the blasted Northmen!"
Felix screamed as the banshee wail pierced his mind and stripped years from his body. He felt the lines in his face deepen, while new ones were etched into his skin. His hair whitened, the world beginning to turn grey until he scrunched his eyes shut to block it out. The hands clamped over his ears began to shake as muscles withered and joints swelled. The horse beneath him faltered, and ribs started to poke through against his knees. This was it. This was how Cat had felt under the touch of the Lichmaster. Felix clung to the saddle pommel with fingers that already felt like they belonged to a skeleton, and drew a rattling breath as, after what felt like 100 years off his life, the scream faded into the blessed background roar of battle. Stutteringly, his grip strengthened, and his horse recovered its stride, though neither felt quite as sure as they had been, and Felix feared the effects would prove permanent. If his stomach had felt any less feeble, he was sure that he would have thrown up. A banshee. The restless shade of an evil witch. What had the lords of Ostermark aligned themselves with to stand strong against chaos? And how exactly did that differ anyway from his journeying alongside Ulrika? Watching as the shambling line of halberdiers, and now marauders too, groaned and hacked at the tide of chaos, Felix prayed they might all live long enough to regret their choice of friends. This at least explained why Commandant Rock hadn't needed Gustav's wares. He smiled. One less thing to worry about. With a shriek, a harpy swept overhead. Felix clung to his horse's neck as it raced by, swinging blindly back to ward off the flock that followed. There was a rustle of leather, the grave stink of rotten flesh, and claws stitched across the back of his mail. He cried out and struck back for the harpy that was savaging his cloak, missing by a yard as the winged beast veered aside and caught an updraft. Felix cursed as it tucked its wings and dived back in, wondering how anyone managed to fight and ride at the same time. The harpy swooped down, claws outstretched, just as the galloping horse leapt a dry stone wall, slamming Felix's face into its neck and his back into the harpy. The creature squawked in surprise and began to flap away, but Felix too reacted on instinct, slashing the tip of Caragul across the membranous underside of its wing and sending it on a wailing spiral to the ground. The remaining harpies seemed content to streak overhead onto Kurzaiko, and Felix let out a relieved breath. Handgun and bowfire tracked them, but they were too nimble, swooping around the ornate onion dome of the Ataman's manor and harrying the defenders that were still trying to target the chaos infantry. Soldiers ran through the streets with spears, accompanied by charging horsemen wreathed in smoke from their discharging pistols. Felix tried to think of something he could do to help, but it was hopeless. He was one man in the face of 100,000. The horse galloped on, and despite his continuing conviction that they were all finished, he felt warmth spread from his hand where it touched the dragon-head hilt of his sword, up his arm and into his body. It was too hot to be comfortable, but didn't burn. More like a hot pack to reinvigorate a sore muscle. New strength and a strange courage washed through him. He was still doomed, but it didn't seem to trouble him nearly so much. Caragul became so hot that it scorched his hand, but rather than make him flinch, his fingers tightened. The sleet was no longer falling on his head, and he looked up just as a heavy shadow fell across him. Felix gawped at the chaos dragon that swept overhead, blood oozing from the red scales of its titanic frame. A droplet splotched Felix's mail, and the downwash from its flight ruffled his hair. Its shadow stretched on, neck,
wings, body, finally moving on with a spatter of sleet and a muscular whip of the monster's tail. He saw the terror that gripped the defenders of Kazaiko at the monster bearing down on them from above. But Felix didn't share it. All he felt was a desire that made his earlier pleasure at holding the sword again seem shallow, an anger that the dragon was heading towards the village and not towards him. The rational part of him knew that that was a foolish thing to be annoyed about, whilst one was surrounded by the forces of chaos. But it was coming from the blade, not from him. The Templar blade was intended for a certain life, as Felix was becoming increasingly convinced that he was. It was forged to be the bane of dragons. Felix still didn't know what he was meant for, but right then and there, with the semi-sentient will of Caragul saturating him with its power, that didn't seem important. The dragon banked as it approached the village, Longtail whipping a trunk from the battlements of the Ataman's manor and sending a pair of crossbowmen screaming to their deaths. Flame licked over its fangs and then erupted in a raging torrent of fire that seared down a Kazaiko street and reduced a score of spearmen and a unit of pistoliers to ash. Survivors screamed, stumbling into side streets and rolling through slush to douse burning livery, as around them wooden thatch began to flicker. The dragon beat its wings and circled the manor for another pass. A loose volley of gunfire chased it, but it was so vast they were little more than pinpricks. It would take a direct hit from a great cannon to make it blink. The smell of smouldering timbers filled Felix's nose as the dragon glided lazily around the manor's onion dome roof and unleashed another jet of blood-tinged flame onto the streets. Felix waved his sword above his head and shouted abuse. The blade seemed to glow as if it had been plated with gold as the monster swelled in Felix's vision. He felt excitement rise, but retained just enough good sense to dismount and shove his horse back on its way. He was one man, but the Chaos Dragon seemed to regard him as something more. It was probably just the sword, he thought. With a crunch of masonry, the dragon landed on the roof of one of the fortified buildings at the edge of the village. Its massive wings beat to steady itself, the power behind them snatching at Felix's cloak and threatening to throw him over. From somewhere he found the strength to stand up to it, angled his glowing sword into what must have seemed a pointless guard, and continued to yell challenges and threats that would have turned his stomach had he been thinking clearly. Its neck snaked high above its beating wings. Felix could see the blue tint in the dragon's eyes and smell the sulphur of its breath. Liquid fire dribbled from its jaw.
"What are you waiting for?"
Felix shouted.
"I've slain bigger than you!"
The dragon's neck rippled, and it emitted a barrage of breathy barks. Felix strongly suspected it was laughing at him. He tightened his grip on his sword, willing it to come. But then the monster's head swung back towards the village, as if startled. Felix glanced that way too, just in time to see the sturdy oak doors of the Ataman's manor explode outwards in a blast of timber before the battering ram shape of a monstrously armored minotaur. A handful of broken Empire swordsmen were flung out onto the street before it. The creature lowered its head and bellowed, scraping its cloven feet through the road and smashing the butt end of a monstrous warhammer into the ground. A mass of beastmen spilled after it. Their coarse fur was thick with mud, as if they'd been travelling underground. Embers caught burning reflections in their dull cow eyes, as their senses adjusted to the fire and cries of the outside world. Where in damnation had they come from? Felix watched them clutch axes and wicked-looking glaives and charge into the smoke that was filling Kerzaiko's streets. A lot of them were running towards Felix. Perfect, he thought, turning his body and angling Caragul to receive the charge. He kept one eye on the dragon, which watched from its perch as though amused. Absolutely perfect.
"Where did Snorri's one go?"
bellowed Snorri Nosebiter, searching about for the armor-plated juggernaut that had been looming over the horned heads of the beastmen, packing the tunnel with their braying and dung-stink just seconds before.
"Damn it, Snorri! Just hold the gate, will you?"
An arc of lightning jagged around the runesmith's staff and blasted a ram-headed gore into sizzling meat that painted the ceiling and made Snorri hungry.
Gorlin pointed his still crackling staff down the tunnel to a stone dolmen, engraved with runes that surrounded what had once been a rune-sealed entrance to a set of stairs to an old watchtower or a mine. Snorri grinned.
That's where it went.
Get in line, Snorri!
Cracky punched his foot-long fist bike down a beastman's throat, then hoisted the creature off its feet, bludgeoned it against the ceiling, and tossed it like a set of caltrops under the hooves of its brethren. His paunch was splattered with gore, and he was sweating hard under the torch he held in one hand. Smoke at the end of the valley. Snorri shook off the unwelcome memory, took off a beastman's snout with his hatchet, and then shattered its chest with his hammer. The bull-headed thing went down with a piteous mewl, and Snorri gleefully kicked it in the head with his mace leg until its shoulders were glued to the floor by the sticky paste that had been its neck.
Dead dwarfs with arrows in them floated face down in the river.
Torchlight flickered across the tunnel, alighting on beastmen and slayers seemingly at random. The beastmen filled the tunnel, horns and herd totems scraping the ceiling and crushed six abreast between the walls. Brock Balderson bellowed the names of the lost Kislevite clans as he went down under a mass of spears. Lucky. Drogon and Durin led the majority of the dwarfs in a more measured but no less resolute advance, shielding the runesmith and forcing the beastmen onto a wall of death-hungry slayers. Gorlin shouted a command that caused the bound magic in one of his staff's many runes to flare and send a chain of lightning searing through the cramped beastmen.
The sweet smell of well-roasted meat filled the air. It disturbed the ale sloshing in his otherwise empty belly, and he threw up over the blood-stained flagstones.
Snorri blinked away the strobing after-images of skeletons contorted by a weird dance of agony, ducked a beastman's swing, then tackled it to the ground and hammered the butts of both his weapons into its eyes. Cracky gutted another that Snorri finished off with an axe across the throat. The fat slayer cursed Snorri's selfishness with every oath he knew, and then some, but Snorri was already moving on. The smell of ozone and burned hair clung to them all. His mace leg tripped a beastman twice his height. His hammer shattered the kneecap of another. Snorri's axe then splintered the haft of its halberd as it attempted to brain him, and he finished it off with a headbutt to its dog-like snout.
"That one almost had me!"
Cracky roared indignantly. But Snorri was no longer listening. He wanted to laugh, but couldn't. It wasn't fun anymore. He beat at his bare skull and howled in the goat face of the beastman that was swinging a hammer for his face. Before it could hit, a crossbow bolt zipped by Snorri's ear and took the beastman through the heart. It grunted in surprise and dropped its hammer, then fell itself. Scalf Hammertoes calmly slotted another quarrel into the track and manually heaved back the draw as Snorri glared at him. His fists clenched around his weapons until the wooden hafts groaned. That could have been it done. No more memories.
"No doom for you yet, Snorri," said the black-robed priest. "There are other oaths yet to be fulfilled today."
"Where is Snorri's rememberer?"
Snorri growled.
"I'm not your damned rememberer,"
Durin shot back angrily. Snorri realized he had never seen the demon slayer angry before, or anything but blank, as if he came alive only when he fought. A tuft of bloody fur was stuck to the eye of his axe, and his fell tattoos were wet with blood. He pointed to the dolmen.
"Just take the gate, and we can all die in peace."
Cracky let out a great huff of breath, and wearily beat his bulk another foot in that direction.
Die in peace. Oh, that sounded nice.
With a full-throated battle cry, Snorri charged after the other slayer. The first beastman out of the village was foaming at the mouth and on fire, and easy prey for Felix's fiercely glowing runesword. It practically impaled itself with its own head-down charge. Felix withdrew the blade, turning outside the dead beastman's collapse and lashing behind it to open the chest of the horse-headed beast following. The beastman stumbled, pressing on its exposed ribs, but the hulking Bestigor behind it drove its ram horns into the beastman's back and hurled it bodily through Felix's guard. Felix cried out, dipping his sword out of the way as the beastman hit him like a side of beef in the ribs, and twice Felix had the air driven from his lungs, first as his back hit the frozen earth, and then again as the beastman landed on top of him.
Wheezing, he took a grotty handful of its chest hair in a bid to hold it off him, while with the other he maintained his grip on Caragul. The longsword was not exactly of much use when one's horse-headed foe was snorting its foul breath into your face, but he could still feel the strength it was pushing into him. Felix was still even-headed enough to realize that, pound for pound, he had no earthly right to be wrestling with a beastman without it. He almost smiled. The Chaos Dragon was still enjoying the show. Praise Sigmar for small mercies. The beastman that straddled him squirted blood from its gashed chest, and Felix felt his grip loosen. With a gasp of desperation, Felix whacked it in the side of the head with the flat of his blade. Caragul took a chip from its curling horns and startled it enough for Felix to get strength behind the knee he stabbed into its groin. It brayed in sudden paroxysms, and Felix was able to free a foot to shove the beastman back. The massive Bestigor loomed into his vision in its place. It was swinging a morning star, and, insofar as was possible with its warped goat features, looked to be smiling. Felix drew up onto one knee and raised his sword to parry as the spiked ball swung down on its chain. He had time for one wild thought before his brains were smashed out of his skull. He really wished Gotrek could have been here for this. He thrust up his sword, closed his eyes, and felt blood rain over his arm and face. It was his own. It surely had to be his own. But there was no pain, except from where his back had hit the ground, and his grip on Caragul had lost none of its preternatural power, as might be expected if his forearm had just been popped by a morning star. He opened his eyes and glanced over his rock-steady guard to see the Bestigor choking on a cavalry sabre that had been rammed so far down its throat that the hilt had cracked its back teeth. Stupidly, his first thought was that Gotrek had saved him. It had become an instinctual response to having his bacon hauled out of the fire, and the strength required to drive the heavy slashing blade 2 feet through a beastman's neck was staggering. But of course it wasn't the slayer. Ulrika ripped her sword free, taking most of the Bestigor's face with it, spun for power and split a beastman from shoulder to sternum with a two-handed slash. Blood sprayed her pearl-white plate armor. She was an angel of the steppe, an avatar of cold-handed destruction. Another charged in, horns down. Ulrika sidestepped behind it as though the beast was weighed down by chains and neatly severed its spinal cord with a slash of her own claws. As it toppled, she reclaimed her sword from the bisected beastman with a crack like a butcher splitting spare ribs. In a numb kind of horror, Felix watched the vampiress blur from point to point. He never saw her move. It was like watching static images that were projected onto one place and then shifted when a beastman fell apart into an eviscerated ruin. At one point he was certain he saw two of her. Felix tried to tell himself he was foolish to be so shocked. It was still Ulrika. But that line of rationalization was starting to stretch a little thin, even for him, so he tried another. Gotrek, too, had been terrifying at times. Was this really so different? One of the beastmen swung a cleaver for where Ulrika stood, but the apparition was merely an illusion of her speed. Its cleaver hacked through snow and air, and a split second later Ulrika fell on it from behind, lifting it from the ground and sinking her fangs into its neck. Its panicked heart fired a spurt of blood that ricocheted from the inside of Ulrika's cheek and painted her inhuman beauty with crimson splatters. She took one mouthful and then snapped the beastman's neck with such force that its body spun 3 times before impacting on the ground with a snap of bone. Another charged in, swinging an axe before it like a drunkard trying to strike a wasp. Ulrika twisted like a snake, landing a rib-shattering kick that threw the mewling creature through the smouldering drystone wall of the nearest building. The breach coughed flame, and the beastmen screamed as it burned. The surviving beastmen bleated in disbelief. And something else gave its volcanic rumble of disapproval. Felix turned as the Chaos Dragon opened its mouth. A fire, hot enough to burn damned souls, rose from its throat. Some undeniable imperative threw Felix in front of Ulrika, just as the dragon exhaled. Felix swallowed the desire to scream, as a ball of fire struck down towards him, and he brought Caragul up, as if to parry a blow. The runes on the weapon blazed brighter than the blade itself, and the dragon breath struck a shell of energy. Fire raged across an invisible barrier as a blast of pressure drove him down onto one knee. Felix felt the downward force intensify, could almost visualize the dragon dredging every last scrap of breath from its monstrous lungs. With a roar of effort, he pushed back. There was no way he should have been able to stand, much less take a forward step, but somehow he managed both, and more. He felt like a champion. Caragul pulsed in anticipation of blood. He struck, piercing his own sphere of protection and slicing through the meat of the dragon's forelimb. The dragon roared in unexpected pain, smoke roiling from its throat in bursts as it retreated from the pathetic human that had somehow managed to hurt it. With an exultant laugh that was all Caragul, Felix ran after it, only for the beat of the dragon's wings to force him back. The flesh of his cheeks rippled under the downwash as the dragon turned its awesome strength into lift. The dragon climbed, and Felix set himself for another attack. The monster's blue eyes glittered with a madness and hate beyond human reckoning. The foul smoke issuing from its mouth again became fire. Felix met its stare and willed it to bring it on. Then the dragon hissed, threw down another blast of copper-tainted wind to climb higher still, and then turned away towards the standing stones that Ulrika had called Trisisiostri. Felix hurled insults after it, but there was absolutely nothing he could do to bring it down from here. As if to taunt him, the dragon sent a fiery wave searing across a line of bowmen. The dry stone wall they were cowering behind flew apart as though it had been detonated from underneath to leave a blackened crater strewn with bodies. Felix wavered, returning the power he had been loaned as the distance between Caragul and the dragon increased, then slumped back down to one knee. Strong hands hoisted him back onto his feet. Cold hands. Felix shivered. Ulrika's face was slick with gore, the horror of the familiar juxtaposed with something from a nightmare. He couldn't shake the image of the moment she had torn that beastman's throat out from his mind. She wasn't even breathing hard. But then, of course, she wouldn't. She didn't breathe.
"What's the matter?"
asked Ulrika, swaying a little, no doubt in shock. A well-intentioned smile made her look only more macabre.
"You fought a dragon before?"
Breathless, Felix nodded towards the dead beastmen.
"It's a lot for just one day."
Ulrika rubbed her chin as though just realizing there might be something there, then shook her head angrily as if to clear it. She pointed east. The roof of a two-story building collapsed in flames. Felix wondered why nobody was trying to put the fires out, but then realized that they were probably too busy on the walls. On reasoned reflection, the only thing to wonder was why nobody was running away. The sound of a hymn rose over the flames, its vocals interweaving with the hellish instruments of handgun fire and screams. Smoke was beginning to sting his eyes, but Felix looked where Ulrika directed. The undead regiments fighting on the open veldt were being ground down under wave after wave of berserker assaults.
"My master waits for us on the other side of the line, beyond the Ostermarker's positions."
She nodded to the zombies as she wiped her saber clean and sheathed it.
"His soldiers can buy us time, but nothing more. When they fall, this entire plain is going to be overrun. My master has planned accordingly, but we have to take this one chance to get through into Kislev."
Felix shook his head fiercely and pulled away from her. The heat on his back was intense. For the defenders still in Kazaiko, it must have been appalling. But they were going to die for the Empire.
"These people are going to die," said Felix. "There must be something we can do to help them."
"There isn't,"
said Ulrika, so cold.
"Even Gotrek would see that and take his doom where it could do some good."
She grasped him by the shoulder, crushing any thoughts of escape. Felix realized that she could pick him up and drag him any time she chose, or dazzle him, as she had in Altdorf, and yet she opted to try reason. Felix wasn't sure whether that reassured him or not.
"You just saved my life, Felix. Now let me save yours. For Max's sake, if not your own. We'll take my horse."
Putting her fingers in her mouth, she emitted a high-pitched whistle that made Felix wince.
A sense of foreboding turned Felix back towards the village. Whatever it was, it knotted in his gut. The ground appeared to be trembling, not in fear, but more in anticipation, as if it was possessed of something miraculous in potentia. His gaze fixed on Kerzaiko's north wall, a well-engineered construct of limestone blocks reinforced with iron rods and thick oak beams. Specks of black powder jigged along the parapet. Banners jerked an odd dance as their poles were shaken from beneath. The Ostermarkers themselves noticed the instability of the battlement, but had precious little enough time between reloading and firing to give it any notice. None of them were able to see the hungry white mould spreading through the stonework beneath their feet, mortar crumbling into excremental dust wherever it touched. Felix watched on, aghast, as the strange plague spread. The beastman's blood fizzed like some euphoric poison through Ulrika's veins. The village of Kerzaiko was a jumble of heat and sounds, but she could not dissociate one from the other. It was not unlike the feeling of being drunk. There was a queasiness deep within her chest, but with it a license to do and be exactly as her body craved. The beast that dwelled within all arisen licked its fangs, tested at the bars of its cage. The blood in her mouth was beginning to harden. She was parched. She felt hungry. Her grip on Felix's shoulder tightened until he gasped. She needed him now. He was a reminder of how it felt to live without a beast. With a growl, she tried to retract her fangs but couldn't. How had she been so stupid as to feed off a creature of chaos? In the moment, it had just seemed so right, so natural. Almost worse than the desire to do so was the fact that she had been able to sate it. In the early nights of her unlife, she had tried to feed off a Northman only for the taint in his blood to force her to throw it back up. Something had changed, either with the world itself as the end times approached, or with her. She did not know which was worse. Blood roared through her brain like the Goramandi Falls after the summer melt. Someone was speaking to her. Was it Felix? The braying of the herd and the howls of the beast within its cage blocked it out. She focused on the feel of Felix's arm beneath her hand and tried to concentrate on the words. They were distant, an urgent shout for a comrade lost in a storm.
Get out of there, Ulrika! Get out now!
Eichold Hellbrass strode through the embattled ranks of the Chaos Horde. He was one in a vast shoal. But where he walked, men and beasts were healed, and the risen dead reduced to rose-choked cairns of composted earth. A mighty phalanx of zombies and their immortal puppet lords, tall warriors in archaic plate and chill blades, blocked his path. Kurgan berserkers hacked at rotting flesh. Chaos warriors, crackling with the accumulated blessing of their gods, fought toe-to-toe with kings long departed when Sigmar had walked the Empire. Hellbrass flourished the windblade, and the broadsword was life's scythe. Skeletons collapsed rather than near its edge. Zombies dissolved into glorious bounties of maggots and flies at a glance. A white lord, proclaiming himself Atheltan of the Teutogans, cut down the chaos warrior that opposed him, and, voice as the gasp of air from a tomb unsealed, challenged Hellbrass to single combat. The Shade was old and angry, and strong enough in his own will to raise his sword before decay and rebirth caused his body to shrivel, his armor to corrode, and his blade to bleed iron dust. Hellbrass trod on the ancient's funerary shroud and strode on, white flowers bursting from the white's remains to complete the cycle of life. There was nothing special about death. The simplest primordial slime that eked an existence from the ocean's bottom could die. A rock or a gust of wind could take a life. That event, most beautiful to the changer, was thus the transition from dead matter into life. Already Hellbrass could picture the Troll King's wrath, and his laughter was a hammer that smote zombies and ghouls into ash to line his path. He fixed his gaze on the sorcerers upon the three sisters. Only the Kislevite village stood in his path, but that would not hold him for long.
He would bring life